This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
But before we get started, we have a message from our sponsor. When it comes to building and maintaining IT systems, small businesses wrestle with slim budgets and resource constraints. At the same time, they're pressured to deliver agility, security, and a great experience for their customers. So how can small businesses transform their IT infrastructure without breaking the bank? Cisco has the solutions. Consider these three problems that all entrepreneurs face. First, when deciding between on-premise or cloud-based networking, there is a lot to consider. Some small businesses prefer to maintain their own equipment. Others are drawn to cloud for its automation. Cisco can help you choose and provide the solution. Second, security. It's something that's top of mind for every small business owner, especially those that might not have the people or the bandwidth to monitor the network as closely as they'd like. It's key to look for security features that offer automation and are easy to deploy and easy to use. Cisco can help there too. And lastly, budget. Businesses that don't think they can afford to make an upfront investment in technology might want to ask about leasing and financing options. There are many easy ways to spread your payments out over time. To learn more about the many ways Cisco can help you get your business on track, visit cisco.com/go/smb to discover current promotions, free trials, and explore the small business portfolio. That's cisco.com/go/smb. And now, back to our show. Hi, I'm Stephanie Schomer, Deputy Editor of Entrepreneur Magazine. Today I'm chatting with Rachel Scheckman, who in 2011 both challenged and disrupted traditional retail with the launch of her New York shop, Story, a buzzy, never-ending rotation of themed pop-up shops that every few months transformed to showcase different products. It created a valuable platform for small business owners to get their goods in front of consumers, not to mention created a truly fresh experience for shoppers. Today, Scheckman's tackling a new challenge. In 2018, she merged her company with Macy's and joined the retail giant as brand experience officer, working to bring fresh ideas to the department store, including scaling Story at Macy's locations nationwide. Listen up to hear how Scheckman is exploring fresh opportunities for her new employer, how she knew the merger was the right opportunity for Story, and why the retail industry must keep evolving. But first, a word from our sponsors. Have you been feeling stuck? Feel like you've hit that glass ceiling? Earning an MBA could be the thing to help you get moving again. And it's easier than ever thanks to Ashford University. For over a century, Forbes has been a top name in business. And by partnering with Ashford University, they've built an incredible online MBA program that turns students into business leaders. The Forbes School of Business and Technology is led by a faculty of practicing business professionals who bring years of expertise to the classroom. Ashford University is all about learning by doing. Courses use interactive business simulations and innovative strategies like gamification to enhance your experience. And Steve Forbes himself even gives valuable insight throughout the program. Another bonus, Ashford University's MBA program lets you learn at your own pace. Their six-week courses can be taken one at a time, and there are no standardized tests required. No GRE, no GMAT, no other test scores needed to enroll at Ashford University. Ashford University is fully accredited by WASC, Senior College, and University Commission. Get on the road to earning your MBA the Forbes way with Ashford University. Go to ashford.edu/HSH. That's ashford.edu/HSH to start today. ashford.edu/HSH. And now, our next sponsor. Are you a small business owner looking for IT solutions but working with a tight budget? Cisco has the answer for you. If you're trying to decide between on-premise or cloud-based networking, Cisco can give you the information and the guidance that will help you make the best decision for your business. And if you're worried about security, and who isn't these days, they can help you there too. They have plenty of solutions that are easy to use and easy to deploy, no matter the size of your operation. Plus, they can help you do all of this on any budget. If you don't think you can afford to make an upfront investment in technology, there are leasing and financing options that could be right for you. To learn more about the many ways that Cisco can help you get your business on track, visit cisco.com/go/smb to discover current promotions and free trials and explore the small business portfolio. That's cisco.com/go/SMB. So Rachel, thanks for joining us today. I'm excited to talk to you about all things story and all things story at Macy's. But I wanted to jump back in history a little bit. So obviously you founded Story in 2011. Take me back in time. Talk me through your original vision, because you weren't coming from a retail background. So how did you kind of make that pivot from your previous career experience and identify that this was something that you wanted to build?
Yeah. So thank you for having me. And I'm excited to be doing this. It's funny because I kind of came from retail, but instead of getting a degree at FIT or NYU or something, it was more coming from the womb, so to speak, because I'm four generations of retail. So I started very young when my mom took me to the Jacob Javits Center to get my bat mitzvah favors wholesale. And when I learned you could actually shop for a living and that was a job, I was like, sign me up. I want to do this, whatever it is. And fast forward, I moved to New York and worked on a startup I never started. And then that led to a 10-year accidental consulting career. So I worked with everyone from Bliss Spas doing merchandising for their direct-to-consumer catalog business. And then I worked with Tom Shoes. And after 10 years of consulting for all these companies, bigger companies like Kraft and Gap and AOL, I was like, why the heck are people hiring me? And P.S., I never planned on being a consultant or wanted to be one, because I just wanted to launch a company and discover talent and do interesting partnerships. And what I realized when I looked back at the 10 years consulting that informed the launch of Story, frankly, in every possible way, is what I realized a 50-person company has in common with a $50 billion company is it's like going to the United Nations without a translator. Marketing speaks Japanese, finance speaks Swahili, and merchandising speaks Spanish. And so even if a company is doing well, there's still a lot of opportunity, I think, that's left on the table by lack of translation and integration. And so kind of the aha moment I had in 2011 that kind of led to Story as a result of all that experience was you had Birchbox and Kickstarter and Etsy and all these new business models online that were both new economic models like subscription retail and crowdfunding, but they also were impacting consumer behavior and expectations. And I was kind of like, why is no one doing this in the physical world? So that was kind of what contributed and led to the aha moment and the timing of the launch of Story, thinking, can we reimagine the business model and the changing consumer behavior in a physical world.
When you started telling this idea to people, did immediately understand your idea, or did they think that it was something that really wouldn't have legs and kind of like a long future?
So there wasn't. The good news is because I was a consultant before, right, and somewhat adjacent industry-wise for sure, and I had that startup I never started that worked with a lot of different brands and designers, is that I had people willing to trust and take a risk and give me inventory on consignment. And I also think for people, it was exciting to have an opportunity to try something new in the real world. And on the vendor designer side of things, there was little to no risk. Then on the sponsor side of things, sure, it was definitely not an easy sell for the first few stories because it was so new. But then slowly but surely, I think the first sponsorship that really put us on the map was General Electric when Beth Comstock was there as CMO, and they did our Making Things story in October 2012. But keep in mind, like in 2011, I don't even know if people even used the word experiential retail. Direct-to-consumer brands didn't really have retail stores. So I wasn't raising money. So it's not like I had to go sell a lot of people on the idea. Like, sure, people looked at me like I had 10 heads when I said I wanted to change an entire store every 2 months from scratch and charge 6 to 7 figures to Fortune 500 companies. But I gave myself the goal of being profitable in a year, because while reaction to an idea might be subjective, numbers don't lie. And so I thought if I could make this profitable in a year, then I think it will be a harder hit or sell, so to speak.
And you achieved that.
I did, thankfully.
So as a shopper, I have always loved visiting your store that you set up in Chelsea in Manhattan. But obviously, your mission has always been about much more than just creating a retail experience for shoppers. You've done so much to support small businesses and small entrepreneurs. Tell me about how you thought about achieving that goal from day one.
So it's always something that I've been you know how there's like certain things, you know, your favorite food. Did I have control over the fact that French fries were my favorite food? No, they were just my favorite food. And when I first tasted it, and I kind of feel like that's what happened with me in small businesses and developing, and more importantly, discovering talent, the discovery side of things. I mean, my father told me a funny story the other day about he bumped into an old babysitter who I guess used to take care of me when I was 6 years old. And she's like, the one thing, she didn't know what I was doing now. And she goes, the one thing I remember about Rachel was whenever we'd go to a store, I'd always try and leave. And she'd be like, come here. I want to show you something. And I'd say, Rachel, come on, let's go. Like, we already bought things. We don't need to. And I said, no, we don't need to buy something. I just found something really cool I need to show you. And so for whatever reason, I probably, if I give myself a title more than anything, it's a merchant. And so that, and it's a merchant in a very old school way of like, it's the gut, it's the emotion, it's the discovery. And so it's hard to actually pinpoint one thing, but then when you start to see the impact of access, and with Pitch Night, whether it's putting someone who's never sold a product in our store, and then they get discovered by other stores and they're making six figures in their first year of business, it's like an addictive drug. You just want to do more and more and more of it. And the small business doesn't just benefit, the consumer does, because they're getting great new products.
I did want to ask you about Pitch Night. When did you do the very first one? How did you get the word out? And what was the initial response?
Yeah, so the first one, it was really a reaction to the fact that the first one was actually during our Making Things story in that October 2012 story with GE. And we were getting pitched so many products that I didn't have time to see them all. So I was like, all right, how can I figure out how to see all these products? And then I was like, you know what? I'll just like pick a date, have people show up for their product, and we'll like call it a day. And then we'll get to see everything and no promise of anything. Let people just come with their product. And we don't sell online, and we're one store on 10th Avenue and 19th Street at the time. And so I thought to myself, how can we really value these people's time if I'm having them come and just pitch me their products? And I was like, well, if you're a small business, you don't want just sales, you want press. So I reached out to the founders of Cool Hunting, and they have this coveted holiday gift guide, and this was right before the holidays. So Josh Rubin and Evan Ornstein sat on the Pitch Night panel with me, and we developed this just accidental format. Like literally, we had like 40 plus people show up. We didn't market it because we had all these emails we had to react to. And what ended up happening is it just happened more and more and more. And so like over the years, we never marketed, short of putting it on our Instagram feed saying, hey, we're doing another Pitch Night. There's been zero outbound marketing. And it's such a special community. And I think one of the things that makes it really special is that it is about access and out, not outcome, right? Like I had the CEO of Bloomingdale's do a pitch night with me. I had Jeff Gannett from Macy's do a pitch night with me. I had Mindy Grossman do a pitch night with me. And the idea that like you can show up and be talking to the chairman and CEO of Macy's and telling him the story about how you came up with the design for your necklace without any connection or qualifying criteria beyond having a product to sell, to me is like really impactful.
Of course. How much more difficult did the response to Pitch Night as it continued to grow and more people would show up? I mean, that was fantastic, but I'm sure it made your job as a curator all the more difficult.
Well, I think like, as a merchant, you're constantly looking for new things, right? And so it's kind of like when you think of a museum curator, every exhibition is a new exhibition. And so one of my favorite experiences is going to trade shows, which people laugh at. Like the New York Gift Show is like my all-time favorite.
That's my absolute nightmare.
Exactly my point. That's what makes the world go round. And so like I'm a visual learner. It's kind of merchandise is my drug, so to speak. I see something, I always say a good person's like a good product, and you know in 10 seconds, like, oh my God, I gotta have it. So it definitely made my job more fun and easier, to be honest with you.
That's terrific. So in 2018, Story is acquired by Macy's. Talk to me about this deal, how it came to be. Did they reach out to you about bringing Story under the umbrella of Macy's?
Yeah, so what happened was, is kind of just to set the context, around 2014 was when all those headlines started popping up about stores are changing and all this negative stuff about malls and this and that. And what started to happen is more and more of our foot traffic at Story were retail executives or buyers looking for product. Huge part of our customer base became B2B. And within the industry, like 20%, I would say between 20 and 30% at the end was like, whether it was like the Nike innovation team, I mean, you name it. And so I, second to being a merchant, I'm like a retail student. And so I will meet with and talk to anyone about the business of retail because I'm fascinated by it. And I had the great fortune of meeting many of the CEOs and the leaders in our business. And I met Jeff Gannett and Terry Lundgren, but unrelated and separately. But I met Jeff in 2016 and literally just shook his hand. And the story people don't know, really, I don't know if I've ever told it before, but I met him for a half a second. And then I was on a business trip overseas. And it was, what was it? It was like June. I remember it was like June. It was during the Cannes Lions Festival. And it was announced that Jeff Gannett was becoming chairman and CEO. And literally, I said two words to the guy. I knew nothing about him, had no thoughts of anything with Macy's. I was talking to different companies about selling because I was excited to do something at scale. And that's not what we do. I'm good at figuring out wacky ways to start new things. And so I was excited by the idea of doing something at scale. And so long story short, I guessed his email address. And I have no idea why I did this. I think I was jet lagged and couldn't sleep. And so I sent him a note and I was like, hi, just saw the news. Not sure if you remember me. Congratulations. Within 7 minutes on the day that he was named chairman and CEO, I get an email back saying, not only acknowledging my note, but really paying a compliment to Story. And I was like, this guy's special. And I was like, can we go to lunch and be friends? And so for 2 years, we'd go to lunch, we'd have drinks, we'd teach. We both are on the board of the National Retail Federation. And he was like my buddy. And so we were kind of friends. We weren't dating in the business proverbial sense. And then he called me into his office in the winter of 2018 and said, so I was thinking we'd like to hire you and acquire Story. And consumers are changing and there's all these new experiences and I'm looking for a co-architect to launch and try new things. And so there you have it. The deal was done in less than 3 months, which was also remarkable.
Wow, that's incredible. So you said you had been kind of entertaining or at least having conversations with other brands about a possible partnership. Why did those ultimately not come to fruition?
Because the thing about Story and what I perceive as its value and my experience and skill set, it's very easy on the outside to see something bossy and be like, oh my God, oh my God, I want to be there and I want to do that. But then when you kind of like, back to my dating analogies, like wake up without makeup on and really start to understand what's under the hood of the car, I was like, these companies don't get it. Like valuing Story as a multiple of EBITDA, if you're a Fortune 500 company, is absurd. Like we're not moving the needle on your bottom line. And so if people were looking at it that way, it was less about the money at all. It was more about the fact that if that's really how they're determining our value, I don't think they fully understand what Story does. And then the same with me is when it kind of got down to conversations of who do I report to? What department am I in? And those structures, again, it was very traditional. And the likelihood of any entrepreneur surviving at a big company is very slim. The likelihood of someone with my personality is very, very, very slim. And the fact that I knew Jeff as well as I did and had the utmost respect and trust for him, I was like, there's no better place to do this. So, I mean, when we were in the office, I asked him a couple questions that got to those two points. And when he said, go home, think about it, I said, I don't need to think about it. Like, your character, your everything, I'm like, big fan. And I said, here are my two questions. And within less than 3 months, the deal was done. And what's amazing, too, is how there's so many people who have been here for a while who are open to change and ready to change, or not change, I should say, but try new things, which has been a big part of what we're doing here on the brand experience team.
That's terrific. Were you at all worried about your ability to continue championing young brands once you were existing within one of the biggest brands in the traditional sense? How were those conversations about making sure that the heart of Story didn't get lost at all?
I think not having the answer or stumbling upon a puzzle, right? Instead of it keeping me up at night or worrying me, it's almost the opposite. It's like a shot of adrenaline. And so it's a puzzle to solve, or it's an opportunity to create. And so any big company, Macy's is not unique to this, any big company on the planet is not the easiest to work with as it relates to small businesses, having been on the vendor side, right? There's systems like EDI compliancy, meaning UPC codes that most big stores require vendors to have, and it's an expensive and laborious process. Payment terms are typically beyond 30 days. People have multiple contacts. And so really the aha moment that I had when I started here was, listen, to do story at scale, we have to create all new processes anyway, right? Like doing it at scale, doing it at Macy's, it's going to be called the same thing, and it will share similar things like narrative-driven rotating concepts, but so much of it is actually different. And so when we went around and met with logistics and finance and operations, it was like, hey, we work with small businesses. We want to reimagine the process to streamline it so that we can work with non-EDI compliant vendors at scale. We can pay them in 30 days so they can fund inventory. And we can give them one single point of contact. So the average story space at Macy's, with the exception of our flagship at Herald Square, is 1,500 square feet. And for our lunch story, color story, you have 70 small businesses represented in that small space. So we just created a new process, that's all.
So can you tell me a little bit, not to get too nitty-gritty, but what did some of those processes that you guys ended up creating look like to allow this to still be authentic in the way that you wanted it to be?
So I think in terms of thinking about Macy's, bringing story to Macy's at scale, it's kind of like you often think of a family dynamic, right? Families share similar values, but different members of the family have different personality types and look and act and differently. And so it was really a process of what are the core values to story and what are the characteristics that we should bring along to the 2.0 version, so to speak, at Macy's. And then in order to do this at scale, which was really important to me, that we came out of the gate at scale, not doing one or two, what is it that we're going to need to either add to the model or change so that it can be a process at scale?
Did you have to hire a lot of new staff?
Yes, and we're still hiring.
Yeah, talk to me about what kind of manpower this required and kind of the nuance of hiring for story within Macy's. Has it kind of been a new challenge? Obviously, you're doing this across the country. So how has staffing up looked like?
Yeah, so it was interesting. So I work with my sister, Jenny, and while I get a lot of the credit because I'm the extrovert in the family, there'd be no story without her. And she's a genius when it comes to all things HR and culture related. And so really the team behind the launching of Story at Macy's was insanely small. However, the but is these two things. And from that first week, we went around to different offices saying, hey, we need to work on new processes. We're part of the Macy's family, right? We're not a franchise. We're not a lease business. So like, let's have colleagues co-author their strategy and partnership with us, or how can we lean on colleagues to teach us or help out? So by the time we launched, we had met with or spoken to or been impacted by over 400 different Macy's colleagues across the organization. Now, this is not to imply that you needed to work with 400 people to get this live, because that's not true at all. We wanted to kind of work smarter, not harder. And if part of the value of story being at Macy's is showing up differently for our customers, how can we show up differently for ourselves as colleagues and as an organization? And so working and talking to all of those people across the organization really created a framework and a core principle of what is now a core principle of the brand experience team, which is test and learn. Because when you take a process like what we created for small businesses, or we're developing a lot of new roles and merchandising and across the organization, the impact of that in the long term of Macy's, big Macy's at scale, is massive. And then the other thing we did, so we have a central team that's downtown on 20th Street, our old home. And then it's a mix of colleagues that have been hired from within Macy's and externally. And then another thing that was new was we have dedicated staffing in all of our spaces. So we hired 275 full and part-time retail colleagues to work all our different locations. And part of the test and learn process was developing a new training program called Know and Tell, where we had every single story manager come to New York and do a 3-day experiential training. And there you have it.
That's incredible. So to that point, tell me about how, now that you're in 36 locations across the country, how are you guys really explaining story and introducing it to new consumers who have never interacted with the brand before?
So I think that's why we thought it was imperative to have so much staffing, right? And because it was so important to me that we got the agility at scale right, that in everything can't be a priority out of the gate, that I was so focused on the mechanics of the operations and logistics and the people side of things that I kind of deprioritized the brand marketing and advertising, not to mention the fact that we're still hiring that entire team. And so I say that because for a myriad of reasons, I thought it was important. And it's some storytelling and the people you interact with in our space is as much a part of the experience as the product that you discover. But I think like that word discover in itself in lies both the opportunity and the challenge, because when someone goes to Macy's, they know what they're looking for. I need a dress for an event. I need mascara. They wear a story. You go and you find what you're not looking for, but that you always want it. So unless you're waking up at 2 a.m. for like sushi socks or champagne gummy bears. And so we did a launch campaign with Jessica Walsh, Bagmeister & Walsh agency, who did our original logo and branding. And it was all about discovery. And then we'll kind of continue that messaging for a while.
Great. What kind of feedback are you getting from your new customers?
It's all been incredibly positive. We've done what's as important to us as the experience working with small businesses in this space is the second part of expressing an editorial narrative is informed by our event programming. And we have this amazing head of events. We did over 400 events across the country for this first launch. So the response there, when I see the pictures that people are sending in, we did this like Levi's make your own t-shirt experience. And you had like a grandmother sending in a photo of her grandson wearing it in the playground a week later. And so I think as an industry, we're talking about experience, 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 as we should be. However, that's not a nice to have anymore. That's a need to have. And I think the next buzzword that's coming up the rearview mirror is community. And so that's the other thing I'm really excited about and is being very well received.
That's great. Do you feel like that's kind of the biggest opportunity that you guys have moving forward as you continue to grow this?
I think there's so many different opportunities. And I think that's the beauty of what happened with Story and Chelsea is that so much of what we did was never part of the plan. And we just kind of discovered as we went. And so it's kind of like, I keep on using the term analog machine learning. So it's like, how can we have systems and processes and people that can be very reactive and agile? And so I think it's a big part of it. But I also think there's probably a lot more to come to still the early days.
Of course. How do you feel when you look at the years to come? What do you feel like the biggest challenge will be for you as you push forward with this?
I think the biggest challenge, I mean, for me, frankly, it's time. Story is just one of three different businesses that are part of the brand experience group at Macy's. If you think about brand experience, it's like we're a holding company and we have these new businesses that we either build and start within Macy's or that we inherit and grow. So for me, I'd probably say the biggest challenge is time.
I did want to ask, talk to me about your responsibilities within Macy's beyond Story and what the goals are there.
So in terms of kind of the brand experience team, it's a new function that didn't exist before. And it's something that, again, just like our analog machine learning in store with the customer experience, and I'm finding that very central to what's happening as I build my team here. And so Story was kind of the first thing that we built and launched within Macy's. Recently, there were some changes made within the organization, and we have this amazing business development team who developed this concept of the market at Macy's, which is retail as a service, where you rent space in essence for a month inside certain Macy's stores. So it's like an offline market. So the business development team explores new opportunities, incubates ideas, And then as we grow and expand it, it kind of made sense to bring that into brand experience. So we're right now looking at a strategy to grow and expand that. And then I got a Black Ops project going on that I'm building out an awesome team for that I can't talk about, but it's a new concept.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to talking to you soon about that whenever you can share. Rachel, thank you so much for the time today. This was fantastic, and I hope to talk to you soon, and best of luck.
All right, thank you, thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. Catch each episode. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.